you know my theory. It's the 20% of the people on the far right and the 20% on the far left that are ruining this country for the rest of us. We deserve better.
The Andy Finch Show. Something special in the airwaves.
We deserve better. We deserve better.
Well, not only do you deserve better, you are getting better, because you're getting the Andy Finch Show in your ear right at this moment. And before we go on to the estate tax repeal, I do want to go over a couple things that are in the news. For those of you that are local, the Wilson Bridge is opening. The new span of the Wilson Bridge over the Potomac River, or as a friend of mine when we were very young called it, the Potomac, is opening. And so you want to avoid it till at least late Saturday afternoon when they think it'll be open, because there are going to be some major delays as they reroute these roads. But we're now going to be driving over one new span, which will have six lanes, three in each direction. And that's no better than what we've got now, except they're then going to tear down the old bridge and build another one right next to the new one. And then we'll have five lanes in each direction. And by 2010, we'll be golden. Hope I'm still alive or still here. And let's see. The new Fed chief has the stock market in a tizzy. Ben Bernanke has taken over for Alan Greenspan, St. Alan, I like to call him, the guy that led the Fed for 18 years. And you know what I was just thinking? You won't remember this, Danny, and some of my audience may not either, but there was a time about 4 or 5 years ago when Bill O'Reilly on his TV show was harping about the Fed chairman, Alan Greenspan, has got to go. He was calling for his resignation years ago. And of course, the whole country was happy with Greenspan. And we kept him around, and he's been sainted now. But O'Reilly was harping on this for months and months. And then he gave it up finally. And I think there are two reasons. One is he was wrong about the issue. Greenspan was doing a decent job, is the general impression. And two, it's not a sexy topic. O'Reilly gets his best ratings when he has Ann Coulter on to bash liberals or the 9/11 widows, or meaning to bash the 9/11 widows. Or he has his best night when he's got, he takes up the, you know, the Cindy Sheehan stuff or the Natalie Holloway stuff or the war on Christmas. I mean, that's his shtick. He's not that good at serious policy stuff. You know, every time he dabbles in Iraq, I always kind of shudder, because he's an inside edition kind of guy trying to do a hardball kind of job. And he's just not, doesn't have very sophisticated opinions. But the new Fed chairman, Ben Bernanke, has spooked Wall Street a couple of times, because he sent a signal last week that there may be, or actually earlier this week, that there may be more interest rates, that he's concerned about inflation. And anytime the Fed chairman expresses concern about inflation, it means they may raise interest rates. So people have thought the interest rates were over. The interest rate rises were over. There have been like 17 of them now since they reached their low. It's the most bizarre thing I've seen in my life. Greenspan lowered and lowered and lowered till the interest rate got so low it couldn't go any lower. And he lowered continually for a period of several years. And now they've gone up continually 17 times in a row. I mean, it's only a quarter point each time. Sometimes a half, but it adds up. Anyway, what happens is the stock market slows down when interest rates go up, and a bunch of things slow down in the economy. And what they always say is we're worried about inflation. Well, that's fine, but one of the things that doesn't much get commented on is these Fed chairmen are controlling inflation. And what inflation... When inflation is under control, then the value of money stays the same, right? A dollar today buys the same amount a dollar buys tomorrow. Now, you never get inflation down to zero, but if you can keep it below 2%, particularly if you can keep it below 1%, you're in good shape. You know, some of these countries in the third world have ridiculous economies. They have 100% per year inflation. There's one country, is it Somalia now, has 1,000% inflation. Well, I mean, that's just ridiculous. Imagine you get paid $100 Now, you wouldn't make that much in Somalia, but imagine you get a somehow you get given $100 on the first of the year. 100% inflation means that it's only worth $50 at the end of the year. So if you put in a savings account and get a few percent interest, you now have $107, but it's only worth half of what it was with 100% inflation. So you're losing ground when you save money. On the other hand, if you borrow money, if you own $100,000 on your house and there's 100% inflation, when you go to pay back that loan, what you were earning last year, you still owe the same amount. You owe $100,000 on the principal for, you know, the better part of 20 or 30 years. And you're mostly paying off interest in the beginning. But the principal stays at $100,000. But with inflation, wages go up, everything else goes up. And those loans become much easier to pay off. So in general, low inflation favors people that already have money. And high inflation favors people who are borrowing money. And of course, the Fed is part of the establishment, and the last thing they want is to see the value of money go down. They don't want to see inflation. The whole country in general doesn't want to see inflation. It brings stability to the market. So they will worry about inflation. Many people claim Greenspan worried too much about inflation. They'll worry about inflation right until they harm the economy. That's one of the things that Bill O'Reilly thought. He thought Greenspan was harming the economy. That is that the interest rates were too frequent. They were slowing down the economy. The economy could have been going better, and he was killing the economy. Now, he did this during Bush's early in Bush's presidency because he thought that if the recovery was better, Bush's ratings would be better. I think that's what he thought. And that Greenspan was keeping Bush from having better ratings because Bill tends to see all this in political terms. In any case, we're getting used to this new Fed chairman, Ben Bernanke, and we're not as comfortable with him as we were with Alan Greenspan, who we trusted. And so every time he says something, people get nervous and the stock market goes down. And that's probably about 6 minutes too long on a topic that a lot of people are, if not rolling their eyes, they're closing their eyes. Anyway, Danny, I want to know if you've heard of this one. There was a story in the Washington Post this week. And it was in Tuesday's Washington Post, and it was on the front page. And it was about taking bathroom breaks in school. And basically, they got a big problem in a lot of grammar schools, and particularly high schools, of kids leaving class and taking too many and too long a bathroom break. And then they get in trouble if they're walking the halls. So you got to have hall monitors, you got to have hall passes, or you have a sign-up sheet, and you log everybody that goes in and out, whatever you do. But what they try in some schools is you get a couple of vouchers for bathroom breaks at the beginning of the semester, like two a semester in a particular class. Let's say you got advanced placement English at noon, right? Or noon to 1 o'clock. How long are your classes?
Mine are an hour and a half.
Okay, so noon to 1:30. You get two of these at the beginning of the semester for that particular class. Your teacher gives them to you. And she says, if you do not use them, you can turn them in at the end of the semester and get 3 extra points towards your final grade from each of them. So students are avoiding going to the bathroom to save those 6 points to get the next higher grade in the AP course.
You know, I actually experienced that in middle school.
Tell me about that.
Well, I pretty much never use them just because it's simple enough to manage your bathroom time for in between classes. So,
right. And how many points were they worth?
I don't really remember.
But the point is, if you didn't...
There was a little incentive.
Yeah. Well, on one hand, I don't see a problem with it. Meaning, what a lot of students do is they talk with the people at their lockers or they talk with their friends in the hall between classes, and then this classroom bell is starting to ring, and they go in and sit down, and they think, well, I can always get up during class and go to the bathroom. They had their chance during the break, and they didn't use it because they want to socialize. That's one issue. But I do think that there ought to be a reasonable amount of time for this sort of thing. A student who's a good student and can be trusted, that is, they're going to go to the bathroom and come straight back, ought to be allowed to do it without feeling they're losing points. So I'm of two minds about this, and I don't have a final decision, but because teachers talk in this article about how difficult it is to control students getting up and leaving and how it disrupts class when they get up and leave. Everybody notices. Everybody looks at it. There has to be a sign-out system or something, or else they're wandering the halls. Some students say they're going to the bathroom, and they end up in the cafeteria. What's the teacher going to do if they're not back in 5 minutes, right? So they're trying to deal with a real problem, and I'm not sure that forcing kids to hold it is the answer. In any case, oh, we've got one more light item here that I found a little ridiculous. So Jessica Alba was hosting the 15th annual MTV Movie Awards last weekend, and she she also received an award, okay? And so when she got her award, she gave a little speech, and it's called the Golden Popcorn Award, and she got it for a striptease performance she did in Sin City. And here's her, I mean, speeches have fallen a long ways. Here's her speech to the crowd. Thank you to all you perverts who voted for me. Thank you to the fans. I do movies for you. Practice safe sex and drive hybrids if you can. So that's Jessica's suggestions, huh? Okay, I don't think we need to go any further into that one. And let's see. Well, I said I was going to move on to estate tax, but I think I'm going to keep going with a couple of these short ones, and we'll use estate tax in the last segment, and then we won't get to Ann Coulter, which is okay. She bores me to tears. So they're getting ready to do the groundbreaking for the 9/11 memorial at the Pentagon. June 15th, they're going to break ground, and it's by invitation only. Rumsfeld will be there. I'm assuming the president will be there, but you'd have to be somebody important to get invited, or maybe a member of one of the families who lost people in the plane or in the Pentagon. But it's nice that they're finally getting to that. It's interesting that we tend not to think about this, but it's taken so long since 9/11 to do some of these things. Now, the using the site of the World Trade Center is difficult because that is a multi-billion dollar property, maybe trillion dollar property. That is hot real estate. And so the issue of how many buildings you put there and how much office space is intertwined with what the memorial looks like. And they're still arguing over that. But the Pentagon's a little different because the Pentagon was repaired, you know, in less than a year, and the government owns all the grounds, and I would have thought they'd have gotten it together before now, but at least they're moving now. There was a interesting piece in the Washington Post this week that talked about the travel money that Congress people are spending and who's spending the most and how much they're spending. So it turns out that there are any number of trips that our Congress people have taken, that one trip costs more than $25,000. Right? Now, this is not being paid by the government. This is money that's being paid by lobbyists and other organizations, sometimes nonprofits. Of course, nonprofits are usually fronts for lobbyists in this case, because a true nonprofit is not going to give $25,000 to a congressman to go on a junket. But our Congress people have gone to places, the ones that have spent more than $25,000 have gone to London and Australia and Great Britain and Germany, South Korea, Beaver Creek, Colorado. I don't know which ski resort is there, but I think it's Vail. Actually, Beaver Creek's the name of a ski resort too, I think. So I forget it was $50 million was the total in the last 5 years or something that Congress is taking, but this is a spigot that has to be shut off. It's an opportunity that is rife with possibilities for corruption. And let's see. Oh, the CIA secret prison network took another hit this week. A report came out from a European investigator, a Swiss lawyer who's working on behalf of the Council of Europe. And while he can't nail down every flight and every detail, He basically has indicted a variety of European countries, along with the U.S. and its CIA, for setting up this network of secret prisons, in mostly in Eastern European and Middle Eastern countries, for extraordinary rendition, which is not the great singing of a karaoke song, which is what I would have thought it was before this term became popularized by the CIA. Extraordinary rendition is going to the streets of, for example, Italy, where you know there's a particular guy who's a terrorist suspect. A couple of CIA agents go over there, kidnap him off the street into a car, hustle him onto a plane. The Italian government cooperates or looks the other way. The plane flies out. And the guy finds himself in prison the next day. Now, a lot of my conservative friends and the conservative pundits out there and the Republican supporters of Bush say, so what? You want terrorists off the street, don't you? If we could be sure they were all terrorists, sure. But the problem with secret prisons is that they're keeping them secret for a reason. They don't want to tell the Red Cross. They don't want to tell anybody, lest somebody figure out that they've got these people. They're that dangerous, is the theory. And they may be dangerous. I'm not clear how dangerous they are. But the problem here is that if you don't have any oversight, it's like with the NSA spying, it's like a lot of these things. I don't want to cut it off completely. I just want to hear there's oversight. And I don't want to hear the Bush administration say to me, trust us, we're in war. So, you know, we've got a war on terror here. You got to trust your government. No. And when did the conservatives and Republicans start trusting their government so much? It's so stupid that they're willing to give up these rights. And they can say, well, I haven't been taken off the street, and I wouldn't be because I'm not a terrorist. But in fact, we have reason to believe some innocent people were scarfed up in these runs. Innocent people were taken to Guantanamo, held for more than 2 years, essentially incommunicado, no lawyer, no hearing, no nothing, and then released when we discovered we had the wrong people, or they hadn't done anything, or we couldn't prove anything. Oversight helps solve that problem. You don't just cast a wide dragnet and put people behind bars and say, we'll worry about it later. So basically, what's interesting too is that the State Department and other organizations like Tony Blair's government have come out and basically said, hey, he doesn't have anything here. There's no facts. The State Department said it's sort of a rehash of the existing issues and that it's lacking in, quote, solid facts. Well, that's because the British government, the U.S. government are stonewalling this guy and his investigation. So you can't have it both ways. If you want to refute what he's saying, then refute it with facts. But they're not willing to give out the facts. So for me, I'm for open government, and I'm tired of hearing people say that I'm naive when I say that we should have oversight on all these things, that we should give away our rights because we're at war. That is such poppycock. Ben Franklin knew it was poppycock. Andy Finn knows it's poppycock. And now you know that it's poppycock. And when we come back, we're going to rant about something else.
I heard you telling your friends he's harmless enough. There's almost nothing you could have said that would have hurt me so much. But how to risk all you got? Oh, I forget you forgot. Or you'd see that harmless is one thing I'm most certainly not. It's all fool's gold, my dear. It's all fool's gold, my dear. It's hardly ever like you think. It's almost always like you fear. It's all fool's gold.